Support for this broadcast of Two Rivers 30 Minutes comes in part from a grant from Striffler's Family Funeral Homes.
From TubeCityOnline.com, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes, a weekly series of interviews with people making news around the McKeesport area. Produced by Tube City Community Media Incorporated, a nonprofit corporation. I'm Jason Toger, the executive director. On this show, we talk one-on-one with elected officials, community leaders, and others who are trying to make a difference in the Monongahela area. And we also take your questions and comments on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online.
This is Vicki Babiak, sitting in for Jason Toger, host of Two Rivers 30 Minutes. I'd like to welcome our guest, Fawn Walker Montgomery. She is here to talk about her new book, Healing in the Fight, A Black Woman's Journey with Endometriosis and Radical Self-Care. Fawn is from McKeesport. She's a wife, she's a mother, community organizer, and writer. Thank you for being here today, Fawn.
Thank you for having me.
Would you please tell us more about yourself and where you can purchase your book?
And I am from McKeesport. I always say that because I'm very proud to be from McKeesport. I run a nonprofit called Take Action Advocacy Group. I'm a consultant as well, writer. I've been doing movement work for over 20 years at this point. And people can get my book on my website, www.fawnwalker.net. And it's also available where all books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Goodreads.
I had the opportunity to read your book, and I was impressed with the way you opened up and exposed your vulnerabilities. You had a number of stressors during your life, starting in childhood. Would you share some of those experiences and the ways they affected your mental and physical health?
Yes. So for me, it actually started when I was 12 years old. And in a book, I talk about, going to the gynecologist at such a young age. Mm-hmm. And kind of what that did to my mental health. I remember being so nervous. I was like, what do you mean? What is it going to call? I didn't know what that even meant at that age. But the pain was so bad that my mother was like, well, let's try. We're going to have to take you to see, what is happening. Mm-hmm. So that was a very traumatic experience, something like a 12-year-old having to do that. Mm-hmm. And then, just the battle with the pain. But at the same time, I was fighting racism. And that's a big, big part of my book, as well as my hometown, because that's where I was fighting it at. So at the same time as I am dealing with the pain and going to the gynecologist, I'm dealing with being discriminated against at school and in my community. So I'm kind of fighting these things simultaneously. So that's why it's so connected when I speak about that in the book.
Well, did your symptoms change over time?
They got worse. Yeah, I would say they got worse over time. I got my period when I was like 11 and a half. And I didn't get any pain. Like, I was good at first. And then when I hit, like, 12, for some reason, it started to really come in. And it would get progressively worse over the years. When I got to high school, by that time, I had been on a birth control for a while. And it helped, and then it would stop. And the pain would just consistently come back. After I had my daughter, it really got intense. I was passing out with the pain. I was throwing up a lot. I was always in the emergency room. So over the years, it progressively got worse. And in the book, I talk about the stages of endo, which I had no idea there were such things. No one bothered to tell me that. So now I understand that the disease was just progressing into the different stages to the point now where I'm at stage 4.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any specific medications or anything that you took during that time?
Oh, my, yes. Now I don't take any. The number one thing the doctors kept trying to get me to do was a hysterectomy. Even in my 20s, and I was like, no, I'm not having a hysterectomy. There has to be, I kept saying, they clone sheep. There has to be a way for y'all to give me something else for this. Like, I see all these things on TV, all these new advancements. So over the years, I tried a lot of birth control, the Depo shot, Lupron shot. As far as pain meds, a lot of Tylenol, Motrin, Vicodin, Tylenol with codeine, Dilaudin. All the pain meds that you could possibly think of. And when I tell you nothing worked.
Wow, that's like really rough.
Yeah. It's a lot of medicine, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A number of women historically and currently are dismissed or ignored when they talk about pain. Mm-hmm. And according to the National Institutes of Health, it can take up to 10 years to diagnose endometriosis. And you wrote about how doctors would gaslight you while you were seeking treatment.
Yeah.
What exactly is gaslighting, and how does a woman recognize they are being gaslighted?
So gaslighting is when people turn around on you and try to question you about what you're saying or manipulate it and kind of turn it against you. Also in a sneaky way, kind of throw in racial micro and macro aggressions. Always good to say. So actually it started with me in high school or middle school when I would go to the nurse and she would just, well, you, what did you eat? That's why your stomach's hurting. You know, cause I was a thick girl. I'm like, that's not the reason. Like, I have really bad cramps. So that was constantly, she's like, oh, what did you eat? And you can't take those meds. You got to come through me. And then when I would go to the doctor, the older I got, they would say, oh, you're good. You're a black woman and y'all can handle pain very well. And I see you on TV all the time, Fawn. You're strong. You got this. And I had one doctor, and this is when we really got into it, because this had to be my fifth time coming back to him. Like, okay, this what you said and what you gave me isn't working. So I need to know what the hell I'm supposed to be doing here. And he would say, well, you know, we tried everything. Maybe you need to see a psychiatrist. Maybe you need to see a doctor, like, to help with your head or something. Because I don't know, because I don't think there's anything wrong with you. So that didn't end well for him. And I stormed out of there. And then I just found my own. I had, throughout the years, I've probably been through so many, like, gynecologists and doctors to get to the person I'm with now, Dr. Donnellan, and she's great. Mm-hmm. But it took a lot to kind of get to her. So, yeah, the gaslighting is just a constant, you know, trying to turn against you, whether it was your fault or questioning, you know, what you're saying. I call it racial gaslighting because that's how it was given to me throughout, you know, my journey with doctors and just not with endo, because endo connects to all of my conditions. And at that time, I didn't know. I was just like, my stomach's hurt. I said diverticulitis. I don't know how many times they told me that and gave me the antibiotics for it, too. And I know that did a number on my stomach. Got to the point, like, I'm not even taking these because it's not working. And if it truly was diverticulitis, they would have took my colon, you know, by now. So there was that constant gaslighting, yeah.
From your experience of self-advocating, what are a few ways you can give advice to other women, and how can they advocate for themselves?
I would say listen to your body and then rest. So I really wasn't able to come to terms with how it was affecting my body until I sat in stillness and I just rested and really had a chance to listen to myself, listen to my body, listen to the ancestors and say, you know, I need to just chill out. And when I did that, I was able to really do some research and look and see, okay, what is going on with my body? I wrote that down. I have a medical journal that I take to all my doctor's appointments. And then I update it monthly with, okay, these are my symptoms. This is what I'm going through now. This is what I ate. This is what's happening. I mean, I actually communicate with my doctors a lot on the MyUPMC app, which I recommend people doing. And if you don't live or if you don't have MyUPMC, there's other, like, typically all of them have apps you can communicate with your doctors. So then I make sure my doctors communicate with one another. So when I go to my appointments, I have a list of my doctors. This is my doctor I see for my stomach, for my heart. So you need to make sure y'all are communicating. Definitely take the notebook there. Communicate with your doctors a lot. Do your own research. Do what's best for your body. I would definitely caution against taking any medicine until you research it and see how it affects you or some of the other medicines you may be taking. Maybe look at natural methods. So like I said before, I don't take a lot of medicine anymore, but I do a lot of natural methods, like changing the way I eat. You can find most cures or ways to treat, maybe not cures, but ways to treat disease within plants. So looking at food as a medicine, I do a lot of breathing and breath work and meditation as well. So I would tell people to definitely look at some natural ways to treat things. Take that notebook, advocate for yourself. And if you're always fighting with your doctor, get another one. Just go to another doctor. Advocate for yourself. And it doesn't have to sound pretty, right? It doesn't. You don't have to go in there and sound like a doctor. You can cuss. You can not cuss. You can say whatever the hell you want. Just say it.
Just say it,
and,
right?
and question it. Make sure you question it. Because if you don't, like, you may die.
Let's take a quick break. Our guest this week is Fawn Walker Montgomery. We're discussing her new book, Healing in the Fight, A Black Woman's Journey with Endometriosis and Radical Self-Care. I'm Vicki Babiak, and you're listening to Two Rivers 30 Minutes. We'll be right back.
Support for this broadcast comes from the City of McKeesport Fair Housing Office. Fair housing is your right, and the Fair Housing Act prohibits discrimination in housing because of race, color, national origin, religion, sex, gender identity, sexual orientation, family status, or disability. That includes renting or buying a home, getting a mortgage, seeking housing assistance, or engaging in other housing-related activities. For more information about Fair Housing Act protections in the City of McKeesport, call 412-675-5020, extension 635.
I'm Vicki Babiak, your host this week on Two Rivers 30 Minutes, and our guest is Fawn Walker Montgomery. A number of studies determined there are significant health disparities for Black women in the United States, and you have been talking about some of that. These disparities are influenced by a number of factors that include racism and discrimination, possibly causing some women to avoid medical care as needed. You have battled this system, so what is the best advice you can share with other Black women when it comes to their health care?
They should definitely know their bodies, be advocating, and kind of make sure they speak up. There are a lot of disparities, but a lot of it is connected. There's a lot of intersections with those connected to all of the issues that we go through. So like transportation, environmental justice, food justice. So I know that living in this area, which is like a battleground for environmental and climate issues with the mill, affected my health. So we should be taking all that into account when we're, you know, advocating for ourselves, like our environment. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you schedule in rest and wellness, like we schedule in work and we schedule in meetings and in Zooms and team meetings and all that. We need to schedule the rest, schedule the wellness, make sure that you're taking breaks, make sure that you are around supportive people. I can't stress that anymore. I talk a lot in the book about my kitchen table. So Black women need to make sure that we have people around us that support us and people that who don't make us repeat our stories. Because that's one thing I don't feel like we talk about a lot when we push that narrative of strong Black women. We'll say something, but then you don't believe us. We got to repeat it again. And I've asked people, like, why do you do that to me? And I say, oh, well, we figured you're strong. You got it. You know, you'll get over it. So,
right.
And they'll totally forget. And I'm like, well, I told you I was going through that. Oh, well, you know, you all right. That kind of stuff. So make sure that, you know, we're keeping a supportive environment around us. But at the end of the day, no one is going to rock for you like you're going to rock for yourself. So make sure that you are, you know, advocating for yourself. You have a strong support team, that you're looking just not at the Western medicine, but also natural medicine as well.
In the title of your book, you mentioned radical self-care. Mm-hmm. Describe what that looks like and what it includes. So what can families do to help women in general feel they are not alone in their struggles, mm-hmm. and especially Black women who often feel pressure in fulfilling the stereotype of being strong?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, to me, radical self-care means like what it says, being really radical about it. So when you think of the term radical, it is, you know, it's out there, it's different, it's stern, it's assertive. You have to be that way about your self-care. You have to say no if you're not feeling well. You have to set boundaries and stick to them. A lot of people set them, but they don't stick to them. So you have to set the boundaries and make sure you stick to them. If that means telling your kids no, if that means telling your partner no, your parents, whoever it is, you have to put yourself first at all times. Mm-hmm. So that's what radical self-care means. It's I am up top of my needs. And then everybody else is below. And sometimes that's hard for people to hear, especially if you have a family. But you literally have to take care of yourself. So that's what radical self-care means. And it will extend to your family. And I talk about that in the book as well, how I kind of taught my daughter to heal because she's seen me finally sit down for a minute and put myself first and tell people, no, I can't come to this meeting, or no, I can't advocate for that, or no, I can't do that. And she said, you home a lot. And I said, because I ain't feeling well. And I decided that, you know, I'm going to rest. So definitely putting yourself first, I say by any means necessary, whatever that looks like for you, because you have to be here. And you're no good to no one if you're not here. Mm-hmm. And you damn sure ain't no good to yourself if you're not here either. As far as what people can do, they need to listen. Endometriosis is an invisible disability. So I don't look like I have a disability, but, you know, I wake up every morning with a heating pad. I don't know what my day is going to look like because I don't know how my pain is going to be that particular day. Sometimes it's hard to walk if I'm in pain, but like, I don't have a sticker that says I have endo. So
yeah,
people
yeah.
don't, you know, they're like, oh, she's fine. I don't know what she's talking about. So it's an invisible kind of thing. So listen, watch out for, you know, any symptoms that they may be having. Go to the doctors with them. I was always hopeful my husband went with me, even if he didn't say anything, just for the moral support, but also mm-hmm. the gaslighting. Because I would look at him like, did you hear that? He's like, yeah, I heard the same way. I'm like, okay. Because you begin to think, like, maybe I am crazy. Like, what? Like, because everybody's yeah. telling me the same
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
So having them there at the doctor's mm-hmm. appointment with you, having them look at your medical journal. So really being supportive. Also with the food. And now this is not the same for everybody with endometriosis because everyone is different. So for me, it helped to change the way I eat, and it helped for my kitchen table around me to kind of support that. Mm-hmm. So and also look at other ways to help them. My husband really did his research and said, hey, let's try CBD. Let's try mm-hmm. something different for this. Because at this point, we were both like, what else, you know, can be done? So listening, supporting, going with them, driving them to appointments, picking them up. There's a lot of outpatient procedures that come with this. And just being there for them. When I had people with me, it changed, you know, my outlook on it.
Yeah, it sounds like it's always a good idea to have a supportive person mm-hmm. with you. It really does.
Yeah.
In what ways do you feel your book can be helpful to a diverse audience of women? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I feel like the book is for so many people. It's for women. It's for people who identify as women, people who identify as non-binary, whoever. Definitely for women, and like I said, folks who identify as non-binary as well. And I always say that because I want to respect that some people don't identify as female. Some people identify as non-binary or, you know, however they choose to identify. So it's for folks who have endometriosis, folks who think they have endometriosis. It's for people who love those that have endometriosis. So if you're in any of those categories, any people have chronic illness too, just not endo. For folks who have chronic illness as well, can read this and say, you know, I can relate to that for my own chronic illness. Activists, organizers, especially, you know, Black women, people living in small towns also, mm-hmm. I feel like can gain something from the book because I talk a lot about growing up in a small town and how that was connected to mm-hmm. my endo.
One thing I was mm-hmm. wondering about when I read your book, you mentioned that you know, like you got into your ancestors' mm-hmm. ways, you know, of healing themselves.
Yes.
Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. So as far as I talked earlier about the medicine piece, and I don't take it anymore, mm-hmm. a lot of that came from me practicing hoodoo. So hoodoo is an form of African spirituality where you honor your ancestors and really connect with your ancestors. So for me, after my surgery, where I almost died, after I had a hysterectomy, I felt like something was, somebody trying to tell me something. It was almost like somebody's on mm-hmm. my back. And I was like, I don't know what this is. I don't understand what this is. So once again, I had to kind of sit in stillness. And I heard my ancestors say, breathe. And I was like, I breathe all the time. I don't know what mm-hmm. you mean. So they're like, no, deep breathe. And then when I went to my pelvic floor therapist, she said the number one way to kind of treat the type of endo you have is breathing. So that's what they were trying to tell me. So then I went, kind of got certified in breath work, and our ancestors would heal with the elements. So they would heal by breathing. They would mm-hmm. heal by sound. So I started to do sound healing as well. I have a sound therapist I work with. She uses some bowls. And then I can feel that within my body. Mm-hmm. And I can like literally feel the healing kind of taking place. And then I also kind of researched my ancestors. And within hoodoo, we do ancestral veneration. And we look at our ancestors and our background. So from that, I was able, and that's why I put in the book, I was able to, you know, say that I am the daughter of Marna Louie Gold, granddaughter of Grace Harriet Lloyd, and great-granddaughter of Helen Savage. So I was able to find out that my ancestors did a lot of things that I'm doing now because my commitment to social justice and Black liberation is really deep. And I would always say, like, there's, like, some, that has to come from somewhere. So my great-great-grandfather, everybody was from Sumter, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And then he left after he refused to cross the street for a white woman. He got sentenced to a chain gang. And that was so traumatic that he was like, we're out of here and we'll never come back kind of thing. So they all came up here up north, you know, McKeesport for a meal and a better life, as they thought, I would say. So I was like, where is this, like, deep sea to come from? Then I found out that my great-grandmother, Helen, was one of the first black women to work at the steel mill. I was like, wow, okay. That's where this is kind of coming from. Mm-hmm. And I even went back and found that we were along the Atlantic slave trade, but we came from the Ticker tribe. I was like, oh, okay. So from the Ticker tribe, we went to South Carolina, and everybody kind of, you know, split up from there. So it really helped me. It helped ground me, I would say. I would say, oh, okay. And then I also asked one of my oldest living aunts, like, what did y'all do to heal? Like, what did y'all go to the doctor? Did y'all do other things? So she mentioned doctors, and she mentioned making oils and making, there's always this crack cream that my grand would give me, and I could never find it because she made it. it wasn't in the store. So when I connected with those things is when I started to look at, okay, I can breathe to heal. I can do some sound healing. I use castor oil, kind of rub that on my stomach because it draws things out. And the kind of endo that I have, it's helpful to kind of breathe and move things because endo produces a lot of lesions. So breathing and kind of trying to separate those, all of those things, it's kind of the ways that I've learned to heal naturally, I would say, as well as the food. You know, like I said earlier, you can find typically a way to treat things within plants and herbs.
Is that, what kind of food do you, you know, how have you switched your diet?
A lot of salad, which is crazy because I kid you not, 3-4 years ago, I didn't like salad. It was nasty. I was like, ooh, salad's so nasty. I love salad now. So I eat a lot of salad, a lot of greens, a lot of things with fiber in it. A lot of fruit, like apples, oranges, watermelon. A lot of that helps with the endo.
We have to take one more break. We're talking to Fawn Walker Montgomery about her new book, Healing in the Fight, A Black Woman's Journey with Endometriosis and Radical Self-Care. I'm Vicki Babiak, and you're listening to Two Rivers 30 Minutes. We'll be right back.
The 5th Annual Taste of Serbia Festival returns to St. Sava Serbian Orthodox Church, 901 Hartman Street in McKeesport, October 3rd and 4th. Rain or shine, patrons may dine inside the church hall or outside under the courtyard tent. Orchestra Pobeda will entertain from 3 to 7 p.m. October 4th. Admission is free. Proceeds benefit St. Sava Church. For more information, go to stsavapa.org. Support for this broadcast comes from Striffler's Family Funeral Homes. Since 1866, Striffler's has provided compassionate, professional memorial services for families in White Oak, McKeesport, Dravosburg, Portview, and the surrounding areas. Striffler's offers comprehensive pre-planning services and aftercare. And through its affiliated company, Design Monuments, Striffler's also provides permanent markers and memorials crafted in stone, bronze, and other high-quality materials. Learn more at strifflers.com or call 412-678-6191.
We're back for a few more minutes with Fawn Walker Montgomery. She is a community activist and advocate from McKeesport, and she's written a book about her battle with endometriosis. Fawn, before we end, I wanted to ask you if you could please tell us about your book again and where you could purchase it.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So the book is about my journey with healing with endometriosis. And the title includes radical self-care because that's one way that I was able to heal or healing, because healing is something that I feel like is ongoing and happens all the time. So I start the book talking about my childhood when I first got my period and how the journey of dealing with the gynecologist and racism, and then that kind of goes on to high school, where I was dealing with similar things, and then college. And I actually went to HBCU, Johnson C. Smith, in Charlotte, North Carolina. So I talk about my experiences there, but I was still dealing with the pain of endometriosis. And then from there, how I got pregnant with my daughter, and how the pain kind of got worse after that, and that's where the diagnosis came as well. So in the book, I talk a lot about how advocacy helped me get to the diagnosis, because I know that's a lot. That's half the struggle for most people, is getting the diagnosis. And then from there, I talk about how I continue to deal with it through marriage and working and doing my community activism work, which started when I was young. And that's where all the connection kind of comes through. And then I talk about how I got to the point of having stage 4 endo, and the pain was really bad, and I was at that point suicidal, and I was, because I was constantly in pain, I didn't know what was happening with me. And when I finally got to the right doctor, that's when actually Dr. Lee said, you have stage 4, we have to do the hysterectomy. And the journey of almost dying from that, but thank goodness I didn't. And then how I was kind of able to heal from that with using the natural methods and using hoodoo. And then I just kind of end with reaffirming a lot of that, saying what I've learned and how I know I have the power to heal myself. And you can get the book on my website at phonewalker.net. You can also get it on Amazon as well.
How did you begin to sit down and write this story?
Yeah, so I have been saying I was going to write a book for like the past 10 years. And I had things written down. But like the pain, kind of it kept stopping me from actually doing it. And then when I got really sick and I was suicidal and I was like, I don't know what's wrong, and doctors weren't helping, it was like constant ER visits. I went to YouTube and I just started, I Googled my symptoms. Like I put my symptoms and all these videos of all these other women came up, and I was like, oh, maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's this endo. Maybe it's my fibroids. And I learned and healed so much by watching them. I said, you know, I have to do this same thing, because there could be somebody else out there like wondering if they're crazy, wondering what's going on. So I actually did a blog first. I have a YouTube blog, and I did that first. I actually did a video right after the hysterectomy, like in the hospital bed, so I can like let people know what was going on. And then from there, I said, you know, I need to write this down, you know, because I got so much help from other people sharing their stories. I need to help some others as well. So I got a scribe coach. Her name is Penda James, and she really helped me a lot because I wasn't used to being that vulnerable with people. So she really pulled it out of me, and she really helped me write the whole thing. So it took about 11 months for me to write it, and me and her would meet monthly, and then we break the book down into different sections. She was really helpful, but I would say I got a nudge. You know, from my ancestors, I need to really write this down and kind of share this with people. So it was through my sickness. I was like, you know, it needs to happen.
Yeah. A lot of people do that. You know, they have some kind of a process of, you know, being in pain or have had like a traumatizing situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very healing for yourself and for others to share that.
Yes. I was surprised, like the power of vulnerability, because I had never really done it this deep before, but it was really healing, and it almost gave me like a calmness, like, okay, I'm not alone, and people want to hear this, and other people are kind of going through it. So endo is something that people just don't talk about a lot, and when I talk to other people, I'm like, they usually have it, they know someone. I said, how come we don't ever, any people I know, and we've never talked about it. We just don't talk enough about our health and these things and how we all, how it affects us all.
That is true. Mm-hmm. Women need to help each other out.
Yes.
Women need to support women.
Yes, absolutely.
We do. We need to support each other.
Yep. And that's how, looking at those YouTube videos, I mean, it saved my life. Because I was like, oh, I'm not crazy then. Because, like, this woman has this. It was like so many different black, white, everybody was on there. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, so it really helps.
I was very impressed with your
Thank
book.
You.
I enjoyed reading it, and it actually makes me love you even more.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Vicki. I appreciate you on Two City for having me on.
Well, I want to thank you for spending time on Two Rivers 30 Minutes. I'm Vicki Babiak. Have a good day, and so long.
You've been listening to Two Rivers 30 Minutes, copyright Tube City Community Media Incorporated. Opinions expressed on this program are not those of Tube City Community Media Incorporated. Listener support makes this program possible. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible contribution, please visit our website at tubecityonline.com and click on the donate link. You can also get a free subscription to this program and other podcasts at our website using Apple's iTunes or Stitcher.com. If you've got a question or comment, we hope you'll write to us. Our address is Tube City Community Media Incorporated, P.O. Box 94, McKeesport, PA, 15134. You can email us at tubecitytiger@gmail.com or call us at area code 412-614-9659. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online.